electronically, so I can...
Well, this is not on, or it's warming up. Okay.
Well, that's pretty interesting data in the context of there probably aren't any new sources of dieldrin.
Correct.
I mean, this is like...
We hope not.
We hope not, right.
No,
this
I
is probably legacy stuff.
It is. All these, most of these things are legacy.
It's pretty darn persistent.
Yes.
And it's there. And it's in a part of the coastline that we wouldn't necessarily think is overly contaminated.
Correct.
Yeah.
Are we sure it's warming up?
There it is.
What?
Okay.
So you looked at nitrates, I saw, nutrients, and then dieldrin. What else have you looked at?
We've looked at DDTs. We have looked at HCHs, which are lindane. We've looked at PCBs. We've looked at all the petroleum hydrocarbons.
Similar trends or similar?
Similar, yes. For DDT, it's the same. It's the same trend. No trend over time, and high concentrations at the same sites. So same spatial patterns.
Yes.
You know, aside from warning people, if you find out that the something wrong with the mussels or clams, what can anyone do about this?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I think it goes to the efficacy of perhaps best management practices being applied in agricultural areas.
I think it all gets back to sediment movement, keeping sediment on the land, you know, retention, slowing flows, treating rivers right, you know, having riparian buffers.
Right.
A lot of things that we're looking to do for other reasons.
But how about the legacy stuff?
We're
just stuck with it.
You know, we don't know. Frankly, the next step would be to see where this stuff actually is in the environment. I mean, do you dredge the Salinas River? I don't know.
Well, in terms of legacy, are you saying you don't know whether this timeline represents a continued pulse of legacy chemicals from land, or if it represents benthic kind of churning?
I suspect it's both.
Oh,
I suspect, and we'll see. I mean, we see it coming off the land, so. You know.
Okay, so in other words, that in any soil profile, in any agricultural soil profile, what you're saying is that despite 30 years later,
you probably find it in that soil profile.
You're still having it leaching. You're still having it removed.
That's my guess. Now, unless it's just in the river, because, we go back.
Just as a comment.
So here, this is dieldrin loads coming out of the rivers. I mean, it's in the wet seasons, we still see it being washed out of the rivers. It's either in the riverbed or coming off the fields.
Well, it would have gotten in the riverbed from the fields. But
yes.
Well, there's a couple of things. There was spraying of the channels for mosquito control at one point. So, you know, that was definitely a source. But we've also done we funded some sampling by NRCS where they actually looked at small sediment basins in fields.
Depositional areas.
Field level. And they did see elevated levels of these chemicals. So it's in the soils in some places. I'm sure
okay,
higher
so
in some places than others.
In terms of actions, BMPs on land, that's great and all that. But in terms of benthic, you'd kind of not want to mess with the bottoms.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it will get really tricky if we find effects of these on the otters, because there you have a protected species that is being impacted by these legacy materials. I don't have any good ideas.
Which, of course, begs the question of whether something possibly less harmful but in much larger amounts is coming off of the land. I mean, you showed us nitrates in hundreds of thousands of kilos, but there could be other compounds.
Yes, but the issue with these persistent organic pollutants is that they accumulate in fat tissue.
Yeah.
So they're not very water soluble, but they're very soluble in lipids. And so the water soluble things tend to be less persistent, I think. And there are things, I mean, so, and we'll be talking about this. We have a very proactive, interested steering committee that is encouraging us to look at emerging contaminants of concern.
Right. I was going to ask whether there were more POPs being used. Oh, in your mind,
pyrethrins.
Okay,
yeah,
right.
It's a new class, fairly new class of pesticides, which we're not measuring.
Uh-huh.
It's highly toxic to fish, sticks to sediment particles, seems to persist for quite a while, but it's right now it's off our radar screen.
Any plans to measure it?
Well, we looked into incorporating it this next year. It's very expensive. We would have to increase our sample size because, alternatively, we might have to raise some of our detection limits because it would require that the extracts that we get for analysis of these be split into another piece for exclusively analyzing those contaminants.
I was going to comment that the ag program is likely going to be needing to go there to address the sediment toxicity issues we're finding in the lower Salinas.
It definitely should do that. Yeah. Thank you.
So DDTs and sediments, this is pretty remarkable. And we have 8 sites that we sample on an annual basis. Each bar is for 1 year. The data for 1 year, this is one site all the way down here to 4 sites, and this is, or 8 sites. This is farthest out in Monterey Bay. These 2 sites are along the 80-meter contour south of the Salinas and Pajaro Rivers. And this line here is the average concentrations of DDTs in San Francisco Bay sediments in 2002. It's the latest year for which I have data. These are data from the Regional Monitoring Program for Trace Substances in San Francisco Bay. This averages. San Francisco Bay is listed as impaired due to legacy pesticides. So we see concentrations at our sites that are roughly up to 2 times the concentrations, the average concentrations in San Francisco Bay. This is the NOAA ERL. This stands for effects range low. So above this point, at least 10% of samples have shown toxicity for DDTs across the country. So we can say that DDTs are high in sediments along the 80-meter contour in Monterey Bay. Trends, are they changing? No. And for this, we have mined the literature for 3 other sets of data. This is a study that was done by folks at Hopkins Marine Station back in the the early 70s. These are data by Stevenson et al., Mark Stevenson at Department of Fish and Game at Moss Landing. And then these are our data down here. Each line is for a different site. So we took from all the sites sampled by Phillips and from all the sites sampled by Stevenson, those that were closest to these 4 sites that we sample. And what we see, then we tested for whether changes over time, whether these lines were significantly different from zero. And in fact, the only one that shows a decline from the late 60s early 70s is this site, SEDDEP 04, which is south of the Salinas River and Pajaro River. So most of the sites do not exhibit any trend over time. And in fact, I think a point like this illustrates the fact that we are seeing episodic high pulses of this stuff coming off the land and settling into the sediments.
Dane?
Yeah.
Very good stuff. Is it possible for you to wrap up in
sure.
a couple minutes?
Sure. Yeah, I'm very near the end. Okay, Deldrin and Bay Water. Again, we have the 2 sites in offshore, 4 to 5 miles offshore. This is the 30-day ocean plan average for Deldrin. We can see that at our North Monterey Bay site, it exceeded the ocean plan Table B limit in March of 2004. So, in fact, for a lot of the for some of these contaminants, bay waters at certain times are not meeting the ocean plan. Okay, nutrient effects. I don't have data to show you, but nutrient discharges may be affecting phytoplankton, and I can tell you that. And our collaborations with UCSC scientists will more fully explore these possible effects. We talked about persistent organic pollutants in sea otters. 230 sea otters with full necropsy data have been analyzed. We're looking at the relationship between POP concentrations and cause of death and incidence of infectious disease, and results will be available, reported by June 2007. Future directions, we are implementing a five-year program review. We've hired a outside consultant to conduct that review for us, from objectives to methods, the whole ball of wax. We are investigating ways of inviting new program participants, including ASBS dischargers, phase two stormwater permittees, and ag waiver monitoring program. And we realize that for certainly ASBS and phase two folks, they're sort of living in an evolving regulatory environment at this point. And so what we will be looking at is ways that we might be of service to them as their situation becomes clearer. As I said, we want to expand our list of contaminants measured to emerging contaminants of concern and endocrine disruptors. And we were just recently awarded a Prop 50 grant, ocean protection grant, for study of fecal pathogens, sources, and ways to mitigate that. So with that, I'll thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much.
Do you know if Department of Health Services has this data, and are they concerned with shellfish beyond lease areas?
I don't know.
They're not. The Department of Fish and Game should be the agency responsible for recreational harvest.
Okay. We need to make sure that they have the information.
We'll get OEHA and
EFG. And then we'll also, if you could give a copy of your presentation to Dr. Press, that'd be great.
I'd be happy to.
As we said in our report here, you're going to go through peer review. And this mention's coming back to the board after that process has been completed with additional recommendations.
Right.
So we'll look forward to that.
Okay. Right. Great.
Can you tell me, why is it? Is this only for Monterey Bay, this program?
Well, we investigated expanding the program south when it was being originated. And at the time, well, you know, both Goleta and Moore Bay having a 301H waiver kind of constrained their monitoring programs, and I think the feeling was without sufficient resources we couldn't make it gel, and the other dischargers down there are smaller programs, and it's my thinking that in the next 5 to 10 years potentially we might want to revisit that as the two plants get upgraded. It might be time to investigate where that's a good thing to do now, and approach the rest of those discharges in a regionalized approach.
Can I? I'd like to add a comment.
Dr. Hunter.
It strikes me that with the Ocean Protection Council's incredible program and the resources that they're going to bring to bear on understanding the marine environment, this is the kind of information that Department of Fish and Game has determined is beyond them. Clearly, there would be a great value to provide this kind of information at strategically along, at least in this pilot region that they're setting up for the marine protected areas. Mm-hmm. And there may be a source of funds coming out of that program, which to my way of thinking is probably getting most of the money in the state for resource management.
The program participants have recognized the need for developing materials that are more easily digestible in terms of presenting our results. And so they're actually, in this next year, there's money in our budget to do that. So we will have material that we can hand out.
Okay. Thank you very much. That was very informative.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. All right.
Next.
On number 20?
Next. Number 20?
Yes.
Is that public comment? Public forum?
Oh, Chris, we have a card for you.
Well, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
First one up.
You got lumped in.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Yes.
Before you go ahead with...
Well, this is actually a comment on the last item.
Oh, this is not in public forum?
Right. It was on C claim.
It's on C claim.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh. We just lumped it in.
Thank you, Chairman Young and members of the board. Chris Coburn with Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. I had the same reaction to a lot of the data when I first saw the CCLIN reports, and I just really want to highlight on behalf of the sanctuary the value of the CCLIN program, really for the data that it's collecting, that it is so unique, and also for the collaborative process that it illustrates here on the Central Coast. I think when you look at CCLIN and when you look at CCAMP, we really do benefit from some great monitoring programs here on the coast. And I just wanted to support Karen and Dane's and some of the other programs' efforts that we have going on. I also wanted to highlight when some of the questions came up about what can we do about this. We're actually working with Karen, working with CCAMP and working with CCLIN. We got a grant from the Resources Legacy Fund Foundation and also from the State Water Resources Control Board from EPA 319 funds to compile the data from these different data sets. So it's the CCAMP program, it's the CCLIN program, the county data, citizen data, some of the other big programs in the region, and to look at that data both in terms of what it's telling us overall and then also relating that more importantly back to management. And hopefully we'll be able to begin to understand how our management efforts are being effective or not effective, or where we can improve monitoring or where we need to, you know, maybe reduce monitoring in some locations and increase it in others. And so that's a two-year project. We're just underway. Hopefully in 2 years we'll be able to have some answers. And I just want to emphasize we are working closely with staff from your regional board and also Dane and CCLIN and some of the other programs. And so I just, again, want to say give my kudos to these programs. So thank you.
Thank you for
your comments.
Okay, we'll go to public.